On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Now, unfortunately, it doesn't take very much imagination to picture a crowd of thousands of people really infuriated about the intent of their lawmakers inside, storming a parliament building, disrupting a sitting, a protester ending up sitting in the seat of the speaker and having huge condemnation across the press, both internationally and domestically. But what we're talking about is not the events of Washington, D.C. this week, January 2021. We are talking about Dublin in 1759. In that year, the riots of College Green shocked British and Irish political circles and the press, who were horrified by the actions of what they described as an ill-appearing rabble. But what exactly were they afraid of, and how many people paid the price for a riot in Parliament? Well, Donal Fallon has plucked out this absolute gem from the annals of history. If ever there was such a thing as timely history, I think you've nailed it this week, Donal. Good to talk to you and happy new year to you. In the midst of the history, by the way, this week, everyone's been talking about your man from Cara Savine, but there was more than one Irishman who saw all of this firsthand this week.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a Belfast cameraman, the very brave Mark Davey, who was actually inside the Capitol building, and he got some of the most remarkable scenes earlier in this week. And I think 2021, it's probably fair to say, is proving itself more than capable of following on from the year we've left behind us. But I do think it's interesting that when Davey, he works for the ITV in Washington, he was asked about what he saw inside the Capitol building. And he told the Belfast Telegraph that it kind of reminded him of the days of Ulster Says No, you know, when street politics, very carefully orchestrated, it should be said, by the Reverend Ian Paisley and others, met parliamentary politics. And you had things like, you know, the storming of Belfast City Hall and protest at the gates of Stormont. And then, of course, there was a rather famous young Irishman there too now, Donny O'Sullivan.
Yeah.
But that's a much more familiar story.
Yes.
But I do think it's remarkable that we had these, you know, people inside and outside from this tiny little island who got such great first-hand accounts of it all.
Yeah, we had Donny before he was famous. People can listen back on newstalk.com and listen to him talking to us a couple of months ago about how the White House was itself now becoming a victim of the culture of misinformation that was out there. Forget Ulster Says No, by the way. The main comparison to draw here happened much, much earlier.
Absolutely. Irish historians, I think, would draw attention to another event entirely, now totally forgotten, but in its day, it really shook Irish and British politics. And arguably, I think what we're talking about today, this event, had a psychological impact over subsequent decades. The Irish Parliament and College Green stormed by protesters in their thousands. We're talking at least 3,000 people descending on the Parliament in 1759. And actually, this is something I was researching by total chance last week when, as fate would have it, on the television screen on the other side of the room, I saw a man carrying a podium. As we'll hear today, that's not entirely unlike the events that played out in our own Parliament.
No, and I know there's one of the pieces in today's Sunday papers, I think it's in the Sunday Times, about how the National Museum here is now examining all the stuff that was gained to the Irish archives through the looting and plundering of other countries. And suddenly the idea of someone walking out with a podium that isn't theirs suddenly rings very true. When we're talking about the storming of Capitol Hill, and in this case, the storming of the Irish parliamentary buildings in College Green, there is something about parliamentary buildings which are very uniquely powerful symbols.
And not only that, but I think they're natural centres of protest, because what are they? What is a parliament building? You know, what is the US Capitol building or what is the Dáil? They're like the bricks and mortar representation of our democracies in their own way. And it should be said, in the time that we're talking about today, the 1750s, there wasn't really anything resembling democracy as we know it now. But we did have an absolutely brilliant parliament. We had one of the finest parliament buildings in the world, which wasn't Leinster House. But the old parliament on College Green.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's a stunning building to just walk around and look at. It's the vision of the great Edward Lovett Pearce, one of the brilliant 18th century architects, commenced in 1729. So to put it in context, that's the first parliament building of its kind anywhere in the world. It's the world's first dual-chambered purpose-built parliament. It had an upper house, the House of Lords, and a lower house, the House of Commons. And what's really interesting about that building, when you look at it inside and outside, aspects of that building were studied and used for influence with the US Capitol building. So, you know, not entirely surprising, because one of the supervising architects on the US Capitol building was James Hoban, the Kilkenny-born Dublin-educated man who designed the White House.
Yes.
So actually, the Parliament building in Dublin had its direct impact, if you will, on Washington, D.C., and even on the U.S. Capitol building.
Yeah, as well as how, and I'm never sure which one comes first in which order, but I know that there are bits of the White House, the classical central White House, which are actually modelled on Leinster House itself. So certainly he was a man who was economical with his ideas. So does that mean then that we can talk about that Irish Parliament building, which is now the home of Bank of Ireland and College Green, that we can say that it's actually older than Westminster in a way?
Technically, I mean, listeners might be questioning the idea that the Bank of Ireland building could be older than Westminster, but it's the purpose-built nature of it. I mean, they build it as a house of politics. So when you look at Westminster, I mean, Westminster was, and it still has the feeling of a former abbey. The parliamentarians sit in an old chapel. I mean, there is a real feeling that British politics is done in a building that wasn't built for politics. But in Dublin, we had a building that was, you know, purpose-built for the purpose of doing politics. And I think there's a certain irony in that you had this building that seemed all political powerful, but which beyond its magnificent walls actually had, you know, very, very little power.
Yeah, I seem to remember as well that there was a bit of protest around the design of it, because if people know that building, there's one entrance, which is the one off Westmoreland Street, which is right at the street front. And then there's the other entrance, which is on Dame Street, which is set back a good bit, that it has a kind of a driveway or a kind of a porch. And I think one of them was the entrance to the House of Lords and the other was the House of Commons. And
absolutely,
I think the members of the House of Commons were a bit cheesed off that they had to walk out and were immediately then surrounded by the hordes, which I suppose is possibly relevant to the story we're talking about today. The origins of the rumours that caused the riot, so we're talking about 1759 now, it was all started with a rumour, and no one is really sure where the rumour came from.
Yeah, I mean, and it's worth saying that the Irish Parliament, it was kind of all style and no substance, you know, or all for coat and no knickers, as they say. It was joked about how little real power it had, and I think it was Jonathan Swift described its location by saying it was half a stone's throw from the college and half a world from any knowledge. It kind of felt like Westminster made the real decisions. You know, the overarching power of London politics was very real. And you could only go into the Parliament, remember, if you were a landowning Church of Ireland male of above a certain wealth. So Catholics and even Presbyterians are kind of pretty much out of the system. So it's not a particularly good Parliament. It's a bad Parliament, and that much is undeniable. But it's still our Parliament. And I think people held faith in it, that it was reformable. You know, many of the kind of the great Irish politicians of the 18th century, people like Henry Grattan, whose statue's outside of it today, that became their cause of causes, that, you know, we can make this thing work in time. We can open it to more people. We can win more power for it. But in 1759, the rumour that kind of spreads through Dublin like wildfire, and no one really knows where it begins, is that the Parliament is going to vote for an Act of Union. And that basically what that means is it's going to abolish itself and transfer
merge itself into Westminster.
Exactly, directly into the hands of London. Direct rule, you could say. So there's this real fear of this happening for a whole variety of reasons. And people in their thousands kind of gather on the morning of the 3rd of December 1759 and make their way there. And, you know, how the rumour takes hold in Dublin, never really been established, but the time is worth talking about a little bit. There's, you know, a war on between Britain and France, the Seven-Year War, as they call it. And I think economics was at play. There's a lot of people in Dublin, tradesmen, craftsmen, weavers, these kind of people felt, well, if we lose the Parliament, if political power transfers to London, that will have an economic effect, if you will, on the city, that Dublin trade will suffer as a result. So there's always economics at the heart of things, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it's an economic fear that drives people towards marching onto the Parliament on that day.
It's funny that you've already mentioned Ulster Says No in the course of this, because the description of the march to the Parliament building sounds very Six Counties. They marched across town behind a drum to besiege the building.
It's brilliant. The historian Sean Murphy did a lot of work on this riot back in the 80s. Really the first person to kind of grapple with just what happened and the chronology of how it happens. And he writes that sometime around before noon on the 3rd of December, in the vicinity of Weaver's Square in the Liberties, a crowd was gathered by the beating of a drum and some kind of oration delivered. So the Liberties is kind of beyond, if you will, the core of the city. And they march in, he describes it, via the Coombe and Patrick Street, the College Green, all the while growing in size. You can imagine the tension as this kind of mob, if you will, is growing in number, descending on College Green.
For the purposes of this, we will overlook the fact that the Liberties are actually so named because they were the Earl of Meath's Liberty. And I reckon that there's a lot of Liberties residents who'd be infuriated if they knew that actually the name of their district was derived from a man called the Earl of Meath. But we'll park that for a minute, because we'll say that after they reached College Green and they reached the Parliament building, some of the insults that were thrown at the parliamentarians were pretty odd.
Yeah, some of them go into the building, and one newspaper describes them armed with swords and bludgeons. And then there's a series of outrages, some of which sound very trivial to us today, but which back then, you know, absolutely horrified people. So the Earl of Inchiquin is, quote, stripped of his wig. I mean, that's a real humiliation, if you will, at the hands of the ruffians. You know, forget someone reading Nancy Pelosi's emails. I mean, to take a wig from one of these parliamentarians was the ultimate humiliation. Other ones are forced to swear an oath that they'll be loyal, quote, for the country and against the union. Another guy, Langlord Rowley, who's the MP for Derry, is, quote, dragged the length off the street. So this is like quite serious violence, you know, that's happening in and around the parliament. And then one source has it that, quote, an old woman was placed on the throne in the House of Lords with an English pipe in her mouth, alleging that many an old woman had sat there before her.
Not untrue, but it's an odd one at the same time. Much like Capitol Hill during the week, getting rid of them took time, but then so did afterwards establishing who these protesters even were.
Yeah, in the end, it took the kind of the deployment of the cavalry and the infantry to get the mob kind of to go away, you know, to put them into flight. But there's real chaos outside. I mean, you have horses, troops pelted with stones as the crowds disperse. And then the authorities are just so frustrated, I think so humiliated by what's happened, that they offer kind of massive financial rewards, you know, for anyone willing to kind of out those who'd banged the drum, brought the crowds to Parliament, you know, stripped MPs of their wigs, forced people to take the oath. And actually, funnily, it seems like it's the last thing, you know, that these men were forced to swear an oath that particularly kind of incensed people. Mm. But I think what's really surprising about it, when you look at the time, 18th century Ireland, I mean, when you hear of a riot in 18th century Ireland in the British Parliament, you kind of presume, right, this must have been Catholics. But actually, Catholics were so peripheral at the time and had so little influence despite their numbers that essentially the people who caused this riot and who'd taken part in it were people who had skin in the game, you know, and they'd come from the liberties. So that meant they were basically the Protestant working class, you know, weavers, almost exclusively Protestant, tradesmen, journeymen, craftsmen. I mean, it's people who felt that their livelihoods were in danger who caused this riot. And unfortunately for Catholics in 18th century Ireland, they didn't have livelihoods, like in comparison to kind of the skilled Protestants. So it was a Protestant riot against the Protestant Parliament.
Yeah, because I suppose the Catholics were so disenfranchised that they just felt like this was meaningless to them, that you're either ruled by a Dublin Parliament that has your interests completely disregarded or a London one which acts exactly the same. So it didn't bother them one way or another. The Prime Minister over in London wanted heads to roll as a result of all of this. But I suppose the question is, did they?
William Pitt, not to be confused with his son, who was Pitt the Younger, but William Pitt was absolutely incensed by the riot, and he really piled pressure on the Dublin authorities for heads to roll. But, I mean, Dublin didn't really have a proper police force yet. She was still decades from having any kind of recognisable police force. Intelligence was very, very poor. And the authorities kind of looked in all the wrong places. You know, they round up what they call kind of angry papists in abundance and discovered that they had nothing to do with the riot. So, I mean, how many people paid the price for this riot in Parliament? The answer to that question is absolutely no one. I mean, no one was ever hanged or even imprisoned for any significant length of time as an involvement of their part in this riot.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't speak very highly of their intelligence if they didn't cop that the papists actually just had nothing to do with this parliament and weren't bothered whether it existed or not. Of course, in time, and we're talking about 1759, only about 40 years later, the Irish Parliament did do exactly what those protesters didn't want it to do, and that was abolish itself.
Exactly. It did, 1800, the aftermath of the 1798 rebellion, and Ireland by that time was just totally transformed. I mean, the age of revolution, the French and American revolutions had just thrown Ireland up in the air and no one really knew how it would land. And I think arguably the Act of Union, when it did happen, that event, I would always say, is second only to the famine in terms of kind of shaping relations between these two islands. And who knows, we live in historic times now, maybe Brexit will unsettle it at the top of the charts. But yeah, the great fear that an Act of Union was coming, it did eventually happen some 40 years later.
Yeah, and certainly probably the memories of what had happened in 1759 were still in some of their minds at the time that they actually did it. Let's hope Brexit doesn't untopple those at the top of the charts. It's a garland that I think nobody wants, but certainly fascinating to know that events of this week...
They didn't have smartphones, that's how they got away with it.
Well, this is it, that if they'd only been able to check the Oireachtas website, they would have found out exactly what the Parliament was doing that day and they wouldn't have had any problems, would they? Donald, fascinating stuff as ever. Thanks so much for this. Really, as I said, if there is such a thing as timely history, great to have it. So, Donald Fallon, thank you very much for bringing this to us this lunchtime. Donald Fallon is a historian and he's a presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast, which you'll find anywhere online.